Coming up on the show, today we are joined by the wonderful Richard Shorewright from 4020 Podcast. There's complacency at Hull KR, or were we just massively shit? Dennis is back with his tackle bags. Has Madam Boyd recovered from the loss of Tony leaving the chip shop? And when we're not discussing an era gone by at Wakefield, we may even touch on rugby league. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Hello, I'm Rob London, and I'm Gareth Widdick's best new friend. He just doesn't know it yet. Joining me on today are my podcast companions. My first accomplice is my Watson to my Holmes. Yes, the true solver to the mysteries of Super League. No stone or rugby ball left unturned in his dissection of the Warrington Wolves. So it's an elementary, my dear Sam. It's Sam Sankey. Hello, Sam.
Good morning, Rob. Good morning. Yes, I still remember those old black and white Sherlock Holmes films. Which are you, Rob? Are you more Basil Rathbone, or are you more Benedict Cumberbatch?
Who's that?
Who are you talking about? Yes, I think I'm a little bit more Cumberbatch than the ones that you mentioned. I did mention last week that you were Tarzan, and I did go for the Johnny Weissmuller version.
So, there's only one Tarzan, and that's Johnny Weissmuller.
Dear. Anyway, secondly, and think more, I guess, well, he's certainly not a companion, think my more Laurel to my Hardy, no accomplice, but more the turd you could just wash off your hairy arse with a high-powered bidet. That's a fine mess you've got us into, Dennis. It's Dennis Waywell.
Thank you very much. I'm staying well away from your Hardy, Hardon, whatever you said. So, I've got nothing to add to that. Thank you.
It has been getting a bit derogatory towards you, Dennis. I promise, as we go into the break, because we're coming into episode 20, I will come back refreshed and be nice to you. How about that, mate?
That's very nice. Thank you very much. I've got feelings.
Has anyone done the high-powered bidet on the way across the world? Has anyone been to Malaysia and tried the bidets in Malaysia? You done any of that at all, boys?
No.
But, just a hose pipe.
They do have automatic toilets at the top of the shard, though, that would give you a little wash if you want one.
Really?
And a blow-dry.
They have a brown button and a pink button in Malaysia when I stayed in KL, and I pressed the brown button. My God. I saw my whole life flash in front of me. It was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Did the bells ring?
Something like that. Okay, we should probably move on to the match. Final score was Hull KR 16, Warrington 14. I haven't written any notes in regards to the tries and the plays because Warrington didn't seem to try. So why should I? We'll go right to the end straight away. There was that winning try for Hull KR. We've gone on to Twitter to see exactly what people thought. We asked the question, who did we think was at fault? I think Don Bolger summed it up. He said, Patton, again and again, gets caught out in defence every week and the opposition exploits it. Dennis, maybe he needs 27 games to prove himself? We've all seen the try. Oh, gee. I mean, where to start with it, Sam? What did you think of it?
It's something we've seen before, isn't it? It's something we've seen where our left edge, I mean, it's a good try. From Hull KR's point of view, if that was our team, we'd think, oh, yeah, brilliant try. But from Hull KR's point, from our left edge point of view.
Tantrum left edge.
Yeah. And I've looked up this morning, you know, as a team, we missed 33 tackles yesterday. And once again, young Declan missed five of those. Mind you, Jake Mamo didn't do cover himself in glory. He missed four as well.
Well, when that ball goes across, if you sort of decipher it and look how it went, the first person possibly at fault slightly is Curry. Curry doesn't move up quick enough. But we've got young Declan there doing his pointing like he always does. And then basically Adam Quinlan just goes round him as if he's standing still. From that point onwards, Curry decides to start jogging back rather than sprinting and then realises about six or seven strides into his jog that, oh, maybe I should get along this Quinlan and try and tackle him. By then it's too late and it's a try. I think the only person who actually held the line was Bryson Goodwin. But unfortunately, because Quinlan's gone round Patton on the outside, Goodwin's forced to come across and it creates the overlap. As for Johnson, Johnson does exactly what Kevin Penny used to do. He's frightened to be left one-on-one by his winger. So he comes inside for a little bit of love from Goodwin and completely leaves his winger unmarked. I mean, it's that left edge again, isn't it, Dennis? It's just time and time again. We're getting exploited there.
It is actually widening now, do you not think? I mean, when we've obviously got a few changes at the moment. You know, I think it started with Curry and Patton. It's now getting further out wide. So the whole left edge is at times, depending on who's playing there, is just a bit exposed, shall we say.
Oh, yeah, and as we've been saying the last few weeks as well, they're not bad. It's just a difference between being reasonable in defence and being top-notch in defence. And they've not quite got it together on that left-hand side, have they, as a group? And
how do we feel we're going to go against St Helens at Old Trafford with that left-hand side defence? Not a chance.
I think that the thing against St Helens, if we are playing them in any final or a big game, is not letting the ball get to their centres with room, isn't it? It's closing it down before it gets there, because as soon as it gets there, we're struggling to react on that left-hand side.
What do we think of Curry? Curry was always the one that used to have the sort of, he'd come across and smash people. What is it with this jogging all of a sudden? Is he not fit? What's the problem?
I don't think we can judge that. Again, on his statistics alone, he's making as many tackles. He's missing very few. He's perhaps he is trying to solve problems on his own rather than as a team, rather than as a group of three or four on that left edge. Maybe it's individuals trying to jump in rather than all being confident in each other.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, though, that, you know, obviously we can pick out players when we lose and things. But, you know, I think is it not just the overall sort of circumstance? Somebody actually posted on the internet yesterday about how, you know, we've got, it's cold, it's going to be wet, so it's going to be a game up the middle, and they've got the Tony Smith effect. You know, he's spent a lot of time with Madam Boyd. And, you know, we've been talking about letting the secrets out about the left edge. I mean, he's always going to be wanting to make sure he proved a point. He's going to prove it against, you know, Warrington, if any. So, are we ready for that?
They played well last week against Wigan, didn't they? And Steve Price, in his post-match, questioned whether we'd been complacent. Probably not, would be the answer. But again, were we fully committed and fully up for the game? I noticed again, I mean, we had a bad start, didn't we? We gave penalty after penalty after penalty away.
Well, I talked about that, Sam, didn't I? I said the referee would get on the bandwagon of Tony Smith, and the whistle would come out, and it came out six times, didn't it?
But it's the very first time that not one of us has watched the game live, so we've only got I'm glad I didn't go. We've only got the radio to go by, so we have to be careful judging the actual seeing it with your own eyes, don't you?
The thing is, though, is that what you know, sometimes when you don't see, but what you do pick up on the radio is that there's a number of occasions where when we were attacking the line, we had Ben Murdoch in dummy half for about two or three plays. Yeah. And, you know, you can quite clearly picture that players are out of position, and
going on to Daryl Clark, I also think that's possibly the reason, you know, why we lost, due to the fact that he was worth more than 2 points, and had he played, we would have got over the line. And as you just say, Dennis, Ben Murdoch Masilla at the play of the ball, if Daryl Clark's on the field, he's telling him to get out of that play of the ball, and he's there throwing it out.
Yes, I think you're right there, Rob, and I think a minute or two ago, I mentioned Steve Price saying about complacency. By him choosing to rest Clark, was he not sending a signal to Hull KR saying, we don't need to play one of our best players today against you boys?
Yeah, it kind of backfired, didn't it, that? Looking at the table, though, it hasn't really made too much difference because, of course, Catalans lose. Did they lose to London? Yeah, and therefore, we've still got that four-point gap. It's now on Hull, and Hull have got minus 71 goal difference with Warrington on 235. It's more of a five-point gap than a four-point gap. I guess we can't really give man of the matches. We'll go on to predictions. Dennis went for Warrington 28, Hull KR 10. Sam went Warrington 40, Hull KR 26. And I went Warrington 32, Hull KR 28. My score, if you look at it, was 4 points difference, as was the winning score to Hull KR. So I pick up another half a point this week.
You want right, to play simply the best. Sorry.
It's probably time we got our guest on, because cohabiting episode 19, not in a sexual way, from a man that needs no partnership in making him become a whole, with the utterance of Richard Burton in Where Eagles Dare.
Broadsword calling Danny Boy. Broadsword calling Danny Boy. Over.
And the looks of Kirk Douglas from that classic cinematic flick The Vikings. For all we know, he could descend from the Viking stock. He's the Odin of Wakefield. The cool kids know him as RSW. And we know him as Richard Shorewright from the 4020 podcast. Hello, Richard.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, mate. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. Excited. The sun's out. What more could you want than talking about rugby league?
Exactly. Well, I don't know if we're going to be talking about rugby league, are we?
Well, fair enough. There's too many rugby league podcasts anyway. Too much competition.
Oh, mate, it's non-stop. It's a bit like Where Eagles Dare, isn't it, when they're trying to break out of the castle at the end. It's just coming at you from all angles these days. It's just never-ending. Never-ending at all. You're over in Wakefield today, mate. Sun out in Wakefield?
The sun always shines in Wakefield. Although it's a little bit overcast, but it's generally a normal Wakefield day today, I think it's fair to say. It's not raining, which is always good.
Always a good way. I've only ever been to the Wakefield Ground once, and Michael Jackson was playing, but not the singer.
I have his autograph.
Do you?
I do. I was, that's about the time I started watching Wakefield, was the early 90s, and I think he came to our school to give us some rugby coaching, and we all got his autograph and thought we were big because we had Michael Jackson's autograph, yeah, but sadly it wasn't that one, it was this one.
Did he play for Great Britain in the end? I remember going to the game and someone ran onto the field and put a Great Britain jersey up against him and everyone clapped.
He played once, I think.
Is that all?
Did he also? Yeah, him and Gary Price played, I think, together. Well, it might be against France. It was against somebody anyway. And he got injured shortly afterwards and his career never really was the same, sadly. But there was a great stat until, I think it was those two, until last year when Tom Johnston and Rhys Lynn played for England against France. That it was the first time two Wakefield players had played together for the main international team.
He was a bit of a looker, Michael Jackson, wasn't he? He was quite soft on the eye, if I remember rightly. Dennis is frowning at me now.
Yeah,
he
I know.
Was. He was a pin-up. He was the pin-up boy, I remember.
He and Gary Price were very popular with the girls, but that was the early 90s in Wakefield, and, you know, no laser surgery in those days.
I think I've just switched off and then come back in where Rob's saying that Michael Jackson's a bit of a looker. So that's where a bit of confusion comes from.
It's a rugby player, Dennis. He's a rugby player.
Yes, yes.
So what nightclubs would you find Michael Jackson in Wakefield in the 1990s? I think, Dennis, you know a couple of nightclubs in Wakefield, don't you?
Yeah, there's. I was thinking about it. If it was going to come up to Wakefield, where would you go on a night out? So I was going to ask Richard, where would you say is a good night out then, Richard?
I guess probably the answer these days is Leeds, but I wouldn't like to say that. A lot of it's closed down now, sadly, because no one goes out anymore. But I used to work at Mustang Sally's, which used to be the legendary rooftop gardens and Casanovas, which anyone in Wakefield will tell you about from the olden days. It's got some kind of, I think it's called Club Nocturno or something nowadays. But we do have plenty of craft beer bars because we are, you know, trendy in Wakefield. We've got hipsters. The Hop is a popular venue. There's new pubs and clubs pop up all the time and then close mysteriously soon afterwards, especially ones that have drugs growing in their rooms.
Laundry money, yeah.
Well, possibly. Not the ones I've named, obviously.
Ones I've, when I Googled it, ones that came up was one called The Reflex. Sounds very Duran Duran.
Yes, yeah, that's all right.
And then the other one, which I don't know if it's a favourite, Fanny and Bacardi. Over 21 to get in.
I've never been there, but I'm told it's very popular. They have like drag acts and stuff on, so it's kind of bringing a bit of Blackpool to Wakefield. But I'm told it's popular. I don't really go out because I'm a bit of a sad, boring cat these days. But
no, you're not. You're gorgeous, Richard. We lift you to you every week on 4020. I'll have none of that. What was it called? The Fanny and the Bacardi? Stand off and scrum half for Warrington last year? Wasn't that our makeup, I think? Something probably like that, wasn't it?
Leeds can do with them, I tell you that.
Well, we might come on to that in a second. Well, we're going to present this as the 35-25 section podcast, Richard, because we're not quite on the mark like you guys are over there. I think I've actually done it wrong. It should actually be 42-25, shouldn't it? Because yes, 35 means he's standing behind the line. Which makes it even worse than I guess it should have been. We will talk about Leeds then, first of all. Sam, you watched them last night, mate. Your thoughts on them?
Well, first of all, the thoughts on the game. It wasn't the best quality, but it was entertaining. And it was entertaining because it was end-to-end. But I thought, ultimately, everything last night showed why Leeds are in the position they are. I had a quick look at Leeds' stats up to the magic round. Leeds were the second best team at tackle busts in the league. Only Saints are better. Warrington fourth.
But isn't that because every single tackle bust has come from Conrad Hurrell?
Yeah, probably. They're the best team for average gains per carry, and they're the third best team for clean breaks behind Warrington and Saints. So it looks like they're playing good rugby, but had the most errors in the league, 215. They are the third worst in terms of missed tackles. They've missed 628 tackles. Well, basically, they're obviously making
basically
some chances.
The shit.
Richard, your thoughts on Leeds, mate? I mean, can you put your finger on where it's gone wrong this year? Does it? We need to go back further than this year. I mean, how do you sum it up?
I think we have to do, don't we? We have to look back at recruitment over the past 3 years or whatever. They've never replaced Danny Maguire. They've never replaced Kevin Sinfield. They've never replaced Rob Burrow. Not that those people are easy to replace, of course. But they've never really brought anyone in to even, I guess, try. I guess bringing in Trent Merrin this year was a good move. And he's certainly been one of their most impressive players. You say him and Hurrell, the marquee players, have certainly lived up to the billing when they've been able to. They beat Wakefield last week, and obviously I was extremely disappointed about that. And I don't know how we lost that game in the rain. Yeah. We can't play in the rain.
Yeah.
But going into the game against Wigan, I thought, you know, Leeds, two wins in a row, looking okay. Wigan with all their off-field issues and players out injured, and Wigan go and win. And midway through the second half, hilariously, I tweeted that Leeds are back, and then hilariously, Leeds weren't back. Something slightly missing, and I'm not sure quite what it was, but I think judging by the analysis on the TV after the game, and Scully gets a lot of stick for his criticism of Richie Myler, which sometimes perhaps he does go a little too far, but that's Scully. But he was awful yesterday. His kicking game was awful, and I'm not blaming him for the defeat, but that was probably one of the key reasons why Leeds lost, and Wigan's defence was superb, and there's a lot of issues at Leeds. On the pitch, off the pitch, the stadium's superb. It's the first time I've been there since it's been all done up and open, and it's a wonderful facility. They now just need the players to put out there, and I guess they might have a bit of salary cap room now, whether they go out and try and buy someone. They've been trying to sign pretty much every halfback in the competition.
Yeah.
Whether they try that again now that they've got a bit more room on the salary cap remains to be seen, but they need something, and they need it quick, because they're in danger of just drifting towards the end of the season, and they're not going to go down. Of course, they're not going to go down, but just drifting into nothingness again.
You think you've highlighted the exact thing with Richie Myler. When he was at Warrington, when Lee Breers was still playing, he was a brilliant foil with Breers. Gaps were created. He was running on and finishing moves off. The moment he was asked to be the main lead halfback, he went missing. He just wasn't capable to take that extra step and be the main man.
So that's not his fault, is it? That's the fault of coaches thinking he can do a job that he can't. But he can do a very good job, as you say. But when you put him in a position he's not as good at, then he's going to be exposed. And that's unfortunate for him, because he'll get the blame when really it's not his fault that he's in a position he can't play.
Correct.
He's an average scrum half at best. I mean, I have to sort of defend Scoey here and say I just don't think he's up to it. I think he's a box standard scrum half with a little bit of pace, and I think he played his best form at Salford. He came into the Warrington team in a very good Warrington team and didn't really shine. He supported, and then he went to Catalan and just kind of drifted away, didn't he? And he's been asked to do too much at Leeds. He's a supportive halfback. He's not someone who's going to boss a game. It's interesting, this week I was listening to the NRL game when Canberra were playing Wests, and Peter Sterling was on, and he said, gone is the days where a halfback can just pass the ball. He has to pass the ball and run and kick. He needs everything in his game to play in the NRL. And Richie Myler hasn't got that. He's, you know, don't get me wrong, he's a good player, but he's not a player that's going to get you in the top four of Super League. Dennis?
Well, you know what? Funny enough, it was this bit on the match when I was watching it yesterday. I became incensed pretty quickly when I was watching the Wigan Leeds match last night. And Phil Clark came up with George Williams is as good as Blake Austin, which was a good start. And I was like thinking, okay. And then I think it was Myler who made the break. I think it started, you know, things off. Myler made the break.
Was that the forward pass?
It was a flat pass, I suppose. But he made a break. And it was the first bit of excitement. I think the commentator said, oh, and it's a great, great move from Leeds. And then Phil Clark came in. Yeah, it's a great move. But look at Liam Farrell coming back and tackling. And the bias on Sky Sports now, I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I don't know why they don't replace him. What do you think about that, Richard? Have you discussed it on your podcast?
I should have to play the diplomacy card this, shouldn't I, being as it's my industry. But I can see why people get annoyed with some people on Sky. Put it that way. From my opinion, they're not going to give me a job anytime soon, are they? From my opinion, they've got far too many people involved in the commentary. I always use the example of the NFL, because I watched that as well during the off-season. They have two people in the booth. In a very complicated technical sport like the NFL, they've got two people there to explain what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think that tells you everything you need to know. Everyone remembers Eddie and Steve-O, but no one says Eddie, Steve-O, Baz, Tez, Phil, John, Stewart.
Yeah.
It's a higgledy-piggledy makeup. You've got to give it to Phil Clark, though. He's very passionate about Wigan, and he's on the edge of his seat still supporting Wigan, isn't he? He can't tame that fire that's inside him.
I was going to ask Richard, how do you go on then doing a podcast without getting over passionate and biased towards Wakefield? How does that work out for you?
I think that's, I don't know if you just learn it over time or whatever, but I've done too many commentaries, but I've done a couple of Wakefield games in the past. And when you sat there watching a game, you are just in the mode of watching a game without bias. It's tricky. I mean, I'm not a big fan of local radio stations who have overly biased commentary. I think it almost treats the audience with disdain, like they have to have a commentary which is purely focused on their team. And, you know, supporters can't see both sides of an argument. I know some can't, but obviously you can, and your listeners are intelligent enough to see both sides of a match and praise when praise is due. But people shouting and cheering and people, unprofessional people. But Phil Clark is a divisive figure in rugby league, isn't he? But we need a pantomime villain at times. I think it'd be better for Sky if on certain games. I don't know why John Wells is on Castleford games when he works for the club.
Not to
say he's biased. I think he's very good at his job, and I thought he was unfairly criticised by a certain ex-rugby league player earlier in the season on Twitter. I think John Wells does a good job, but I think you put him in a position where he's doing a Castleford game, he's in a position to be accused of bias, and I think it's the same with Phil Clark as well. It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
It is a bit. It's such a sort of, you know, provincial sport, though, isn't it? You know, if you look at commentators in English football, you tend to find like people like John Motson, you know, grew up in some little hamlet in the south of England. So they've not got any bias towards any of the big football teams. But the way we're put together, the demographic. Demographic of rugby league means that all these commentators are going to support some team, aren't they? I think Dave Woods does the best. I heard Dave Woods is a Wigan fan. Never really come across.
Not to name drop, but I was sat in the cafe at Headingley yesterday, and I was on my own because I was there early, and we had a nice chat about Magic Weekend and stuff with Dave. And yeah, he's one of the best out there, isn't he? And that's why he's on the BBC. But I've got no idea which. I'm sure he's got a very Wigan accent, but he never comes across as knowing which team he supports in commentary, which is one of the main skills of the job.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we should really talk about the wonders of Wakefield, shouldn't we? I mean, you box above your weight, Richard. I mean, I think really you should be given the award every year. I can't quite comprehend. I mean, the other week, I think you lost to St. Helens in that Challenge Cup quarterfinal, and everyone was sort of, you know, knocking Wakefield. I mean, I thought you did very well. I mean, you're not expected to go out and win every game, you know, from where you're coming from in comparison to the likes of Saints. Yet people seem to knock Wakefield as if they're supposedly should win every week. I think you do an outstanding job over there. And really, I don't think there's a better team in the competition, based on their book, than Wakefield.
I did get slightly annoyed by the... it's almost patronising the commentary on that game, where it treated Wakefield as if they were a League One side just having a go at St Helens. But, yeah, we lost that game. We should have beaten Leeds last week, but we lost in a bit of a slump at the moment. But, as you say, points on the board already, still in contention for the top five. And we finished fifth the last two seasons, not spending the salary cap. Plenty of players out injured, which every club
has, so
that's not an excuse.
How do you do it? What's the magic of Wakefield? How does this work? I just don't get. We've just spoken about Leeds and how they've gone, you know, into a shambolic state on the field and ended up where they are. How do Wakefield do it? What is the secret behind Wakefield?
I think the thing is, over the past few years, they haven't signed too many players who have been complete flops. And they sign quality players, one assumes, on the cheap, because we don't spend the cap. But you look at... said it earlier this season. If you took Craig Kopchak and George King from Wakefield and put them into the Leeds side, Leeds would be improved in terms of their props, because in terms of their forwards, rather, because they're not at the races at the moment. But Wakefield got them for whatever price they did. You know, George King obviously coming from Warrington and Kopchak from Salford. They do a job. They're not flashy, but they do a job. And then you've got the X Factor likes of Fafita, who, when he's fit, does things nobody else can do. Certainly Wakefield missing when he's not there. They don't know what's wrong with him at the moment, but obviously he was a key signing. Obviously he's got a new contract extension in the last few months. So something's kept him there. I mean, he was linked with Warrington, wasn't he? He's been linked with Leeds.
Oh, he's been linked with everyone, hasn't he? But he continues to stay at Wakefield. Yep.
So maybe it's just the culture, one of Scully's favourite words, at the club. Obviously, the chairman, the owner, chairman, CEO, whatever he is these days, Michael Carter, and Chris Chester, the coach, have a good relationship. They seem to know what kind of players they want. They seem to get the best value from their the money they spend, because they haven't got enough money to spend the salary cap, because they've got to pay all the other stuff around the ground and everything, which, as we know, is a dump. But
we like your ground. Your ground on, you know, on Rugby League PlayStation is by far the best. You get all excited because you can see
you
the sand in the background.
The diagonal beams, Rob, as well.
Only stadium in the country outside Devon to have diagonal beams. Architectural fact, that, Richard.
We should get it listed. Let's get it listed. I think there's asbestos in the roof as well, which is slightly concerning. But it is a million years old, so Queen Victoria.
But it's lovely, isn't it? I mean, I remember my days at Wilderspool, because I used to look across to that stand. I used to sit in the stand with my dad and look across to Legends Nightclub and Snookers at Wilderspool, and always wondered the mysteries of what was going on behind those curtains. And it's a bit like that at Wakefield, isn't it? You don't forget Wakefield. If you're a young lad and you go around, you know, the country at rugby league grounds, they all look the same now. Is that where you caught pneumonia? We did go to Wakefield once, Dad. Do you remember there was a fight on the terrace at Wakefield? And I shook my head and said, I'd never go to another rugby league game. I got very upset about it.
I don't remember that.
Bunch of chavs fighting at Wakefield, there was. Warrington and Wakefield fight. It was awful. I remember that very clearly. That and Michael Jackson. Yeah, well, they're still doing a good job, mate. I mean, you're sort of sitting there in sixth position now, but they're all closing in on you. You've got Wigan right on your heels. Salford, who knows where they're going to go? They're up and down, aren't they? Huddersfield seem to come home with a wet sail last year, and they're sort of within touching distance of you. And even Leeds, I guess, if they get it together, could still sneak into that sixth spot. You think you'll hang on and make the playoffs?
I thought the start of the season we'd either finish fifth or sixth, so we're on target to do that this year. It's just very tricky, isn't it? Because, as you say, there's so many teams who are much of a muchness in the league at the moment. We are starting to see, you know, perhaps Catalans are pulling away now into third or whatever, but a lot of teams are so in and out of form, it's exceedingly difficult to predict, as we prove every week.
It'll make it. You'd think an impossible assignment if they concede another 6 points. Fafita! The footwork from the big man, yes! David Fafita stepped off the right. It was a standing start too.
Fafita's an interesting one, because obviously he went off at the Magic weekend with this injury. I thought it was his knee at first, but it looks like a foot injury. They've done lots of scans and things. They've got no idea what is wrong with David Fafita. So at the moment, he's just flogging his T-shirts and merchandise on social media and not playing much rugby. You still see him at the ground turning up in his civvies, wandering around and being Big Dave as he is. But no idea when he's going to be back. And he is a cult figure. He doesn't raise the temperature around the ground when he comes onto the field and when he does his deer for feet of things. But he's not there at the minute, so it is giving a bit of a headache for Wakefield because he is an X-factor player who does things that other players in the squad can't do, and that's not a knock on them. It's going back to Richie Myler. Richie Myler does the job of Richie Myler well, but when he's asked to do a different job, they can't do it. And the players who are trying to do offloads like David Fafita does, and they can't do it. So they've just got to stick to their normal game plan and, fingers crossed, can get a win from somewhere. It's just about getting that next win for Wakefield at the minute and get out of this mini slump. Paulie Paul is an interesting one, isn't he? Because he could be the next David Fafita, but he could also be the next 101 props who've come to Wakefield from Australia and done absolutely nothing and gone back with their tail between their legs. You get the feeling that there was a message in his sending to Salford, so to speak. Whether he's got that message or not, I'm not sure. And I guess when he has or not, he's having to play because we've got no players left.
He was the same in the NRL, though. He was in and out of that team, and sometimes he played and you thought, oh, well, you've got a player there. And other times he was a bit of a passenger. What was the Wigan guy? Pagliacini, wasn't it? A bit similar to that.
It's a bit like without talking about Talib Matautai, when he came to Wakefield, you thought, all right, and he's good in patches. And then he went to Wigan, you thought, Wigan have signed him? Paulie Paul is a bit the same. As you say, he's good in patches, but he's not consistent, and I don't know if he ever will be. And there's a reason, obviously, why he's not in the NRL and he's at Wakefield, with no disrespect to my team, who are fifth or sixth in Super League. There's a reason why he's not in the world's top division, isn't there?
I know a chap who coaches Beacon Hill. Beacon Hill are sort of a feeder team on the northern beaches here in Australia for Manly. And he spoke to me about Roy Azatazi a couple of years ago, who he'd coached at Beacon Hill. And he said to me, just wait until the contracts come round. You'll see a different Roy. And boy, did we see a different Roy as that contract came round at the end of that year. And he said it's the same for a lot of these guys that, you know, float around just outside the NRL. They're not quite good enough to play in the NRL. Gareth Widdop talked about, the culture down there in Melbourne and the fact that you've got to turn up at training every single day and commit yourself. And these guys don't. And then they float around everywhere. And when a contract comes along, gee, they run hard and then they disappear for half a year. And we've got a couple at Warrington that have done the same. I mean, we've got Lamatazi at Warrington at the moment, who really has done nothing since he's arrived. He did similar, I think, at St. Helens, and he's also been to Salford. Yet he'll probably go on the bandwagon somewhere else and appear somewhere else next year in English Super League.
You will have a player at Warrington who you've had over the years who the fans love, but actually isn't as good as people think he is, certainly the fans themselves. And Wakefield's was Michael Corkidis, who wasn't he running the worst player in the NRL at one point at Sydney or something. Came over to Wakefield, played in a friendly against Featherstone, had a fight, got sent off, runs the ball hard every 10 games or so, but smacks people, so he's a cult hero, but actually he's no good. And again, he was one of those players who, come contract time, amazingly got really, really good. But he's a cult hero at Wakefield. You're not allowed to say that because people have a go at you. And that was always my fear with Fafita, that he would become the next Corkidis, but he is better than him.
There is the other side of the coin, though, of course. And you've got John Bateman at Canberra at the moment, who seems to have no sense whatsoever. He's that brave. He just runs into brick walls. Can't be doing his career longevity any good. I mean, at some point, you've clearly got to say to yourself, I've got to support, my wife and kids here and pay a mortgage and everything else. Why am I running into brick walls every week? Why don't I just sort of just tame it down a little bit and I'll get an extra 3 years out of my career? I mean, I spoke to you about this, Sam. I said that John Bateman is too courageous to play in the NRL. And slowly but surely...
You said he was too small to play in the NRL.
Well, exactly. So he plays in Super League and he gives it every week, but he doesn't have to give it that full commitment every week because, 1 week he's playing at Hull KR and then in a few weeks' time he's playing at Halifax in the Cup. Whereas in the NRL, he's coming up against big boppers every week on his stature, his physique. He's already had the broken cheekbone. And now he's at it again. I just fear for his safety in the NRL, running at such courageousness. I mean, you got a thought about Richard at all?
I think we have to protect a lot of players from themselves, don't we? Because they do like to play when they're injured, because there is a fear that people think they're soft or whatever. But we have to protect the players from themselves because they can't protect themselves. And I guess Bateman's one of those players, but he's... certainly impressing the Aussies at the moment, isn't he? Which is always good
Well,
to
also,
have our players out there.
I mean, we've talked about this the other day. I mean, we spoke about, you know, Sky down the certain path of a certain theme in a game of rugby league. They sort of make up their mind in that first 5 minutes who's going to make the man of the match, and then it just flows for the full 80 minutes. The NRL have decided that John Bateman is the best player, you know, since sliced bread. And it doesn't matter what John Bateman does, he is seen as fantastic. The other lad who's come over from Wigan, who is just running just as hard and making just as many metres, who I can't even remember the name of because he's not been mentioned on the NRL.
Sutton.
Yeah. He's getting no credit at all. It's bizarre how they just... And I worry for Callum Watkins because I think the way that they perceive Callum Watkins is that he's a little bit lazy. And if that laziness starts to show in the NRL, they will knock him. They will go the exact opposite of the way they've gone with Jem Bateman. And you'll see a sort of Leon Price moment where they're just bullying him the whole time and he'll be back on the plane within 6 months.
It's almost on a hiding to nothing, isn't he? Going midway through a season, so he's got no time to really acclimatise to his teammates. I don't watch much of the NRL, but I understand Gold Coast aren't that good.
No, they're not. They're very up and down.
Well, I guess he's going from like to like then, from Leeds, isn't he? But he's got to go into a team and almost become a superstar overnight. And is he the same player since his injury last year? Possibly not. I mean, he's been playing in the second row for Leeds the last few weeks. Mm. It's going to be fascinating to see how he goes. It was interesting that Richard Agar said after the game he'd had interest from Rugby Union as well. So he could have had an even bigger challenge for bigger challenge money. But
yeah.
Australia it is for him. I wish him all the best. He's always been a model pro, it seems, on and off the field. So we should see how he gets on and see how the Aussie media treat him. It's strange watching from over here where we're complete irrelevance to most of the media. Then you look at Australia and it's the biggest thing going and all the players are idiots, most of them.
I was thinking the other day with Gareth Widdepon, and he mentioned about Watkins going through that gap in that World Cup final. And did it sum Watkins up a little bit? If that had been Martin Afire gone through that gap, he'd have just kicked his legs up, wouldn't he? He'd have just put that extra 1% in that Gareth Widdop talked about. Is that sort of Callum Watkins full stop? That he just, you always think he could just do that a little bit better. And had he gone through that gap and thought, you know what, I'll just put that extra 0.5% in and kick my legs up in the air. Josh Dugan wouldn't have caught his leg and we'd have won the World Cup, possibly.
I think you're being a bit harsh there. I think...
I'm not being harsh, Sam. I'm just saying there's a difference between superb players and good players, and difference.
You mean,
idiosyncrasies.
The difference between world class and very good is a small percentage in big games, isn't it? I'll take that. But over the last 10 years or so, Watkins has probably been the best centre in our competition, all bar maybe a couple of seasons. And I wish he could have been a Warrington player, couldn't he? He played locally here as a kid and we missed him. So it was a loss for us. And good luck to him. I hope his knee's all right. And I hope he doesn't suffer the same fate as Sargentson and Greenwood when they went to Gold Coast. Because it's not like you're going into a stable, easy team that's going to win. He's going to be expected to do something in that team.
Just to bring this round, because obviously when you started this section of Wonders of Wakefield, I completely misinterpreted that. And I was going to come back with the Emily Moore transmitting tower being a wonder of the world in Wakefield. Nobody knows what I'm on about, do they? Richard, help me out.
Oh, it's wonderful. Huddersfield will probably claim it, but it is one of the greatest things on earth. I love it. The exciting thing about it at the moment, of course, is that they're having to do some work on the aerial at the top of the tower. So they've had to build a temporary mast, which is next to it as well. So you can now see two things lit up on a night.
It's the wonder of Wakefield.
Yeah. The excitement almost doesn't begin.
Wakefield used to have a football team playing at Bellevue called Wakefield and Emily, who, of course, were Emily. And on the badge was the tower, which was very exciting for broadcast freaks like myself. But that is far too dull a topic to get into any detail about, but it's very exciting. You know, we've got that, we've got the Hepworth Gallery, Yorkshire Mining Museum. A church, some stuff, some chavs, in the centre, they're good.
I suppose. Talk to us about Rhubarb Crumble, because you're obviously famous for your rhubarb. Richard, what would you put in rhubarb crumble? What would your three main ingredients be? Greg Wallace's recipe here on the BBC, which is the topped view. Well, you know what? And it's funny you should say that, because listen to Greg Wallace's recipe for rhubarb crungle. He goes for 500 grams of rhubarb chopped into chunks length, the size of your thumb, 100 grams of golden caster sugar, and then he's putting 3 tablespoons of port in. Seems a bit... doesn't it? And then he's using 140 grams of self-raising flour. Why do you need self-raising flour? Just put normal flour in.
Thicken the sauce. You thicken the sauce with the flour. And you do put a bit of port in. We had a bit of port in ours the other week. Somebody had thrown it in the backyard.
You live in Glastonbury, Dennis. That's why you're putting port in.
I'm suggesting that Richard Harris, when he went home in that old film, didn't get port in his rhubarb crumble that his landlady made for him.
Well, that's the other thing about Bellevue, isn't it? The rocket, as we're supposed to call it, is that it is, of course, a living, breathing, actual live film set from the 1960s and a legendary movie. So it is iconic, as opposed to Bradford, of course. We know odds are not iconic, despite the fact the RFL will tell us otherwise. Bellevue, because they've knocked Thrum Hall down when they filmed the other bits of the film, is iconic. It is legendary. And it should have some kind of preservation order on it, or a demolition order. I can't remember which one.
But we always fantasize about Oddsall from the picture of the great semi-final replay of 102,000. So
it was the final, Dennis. Let's get it right. It was the final, not the semi-final.
Yeah. Replay, that's right.
My dad didn't even get out of Lancashire, according to him. I don't get his bullshit. I don't even think anywhere near the place.
Well, you'd still get stuck on the M62 back then, wouldn't you? Like you do now.
I saw a lovely program on the TV the other day about that farm in the middle of the M62 and the chap that lives there. It was really, I didn't know. Did you see that one? Did you pick that one up?
No.
I'll send it to you. It's very nice to know. He's still living there. And it's a complete myth that he wouldn't sell his farm.
Yeah.
It was just the fact that it was too sort of boggy, the land there, so they had to build round it. He had no choice. They just left him there.
Richard, I've got a question. Yes. Where would you go for something to eat in Wakefield? I'm just looking on TripAdvisor, and I've got the Royal Spice is being the one of the top curry houses. Have you been there?
I don't think I have. I'm going to have to look on TripAdvisor myself now to see where it advises. Because, of course, you've got all the usual chains, but...
Well, we always ask our guests what they like curry-wise. What's your sort of favourite curry?
Chicken tikka madras. I used to be able to manage a vindaloo, but as I've got older... Not quite the same, sadly. But just a bog standard chicken tikka masala. I'm boring. Prawn madras, something like that. If I'm feeling flushy, if I've been paid, king prawn madras. Pay that extra couple of quid.
We rate our player Ben Curry with we rate his sort of performance on the scale of a curry. What's your take on curry this year from outside looking in? Because we think that he's not quite made the form that he showed a couple of years ago before his injury. What do you make of Ben Curry this season?
I think I've only seen him once. I don't think it's necessarily got a fair impression of him. But I guess it's always difficult when you come back from, is it 2 serious injuries now he's had in the last couple of years? This is the concern I've got with Tom Johnston, even though it's a different knee. He's hurt this time. He came back fine after the last one, but it's always going to be, you're never too sure how they're going to come back. So I guess if it is impeding him in some way, he has to, and the coaching staff have to try and work out what's best to rebuild him into a different kind of player. But certainly a player who I'd have in my team. It's always a tricky one, isn't it? I haven't seen enough of him really to make a good judgment, I'd say.
I think he's about what Richard likes in his curry. He's a chicken tikka masala at the moment, isn't he? He's no more than that. He's not a madras, prawn madras on a night out, is he? He's just sitting under that level. I had a korma on Friday night and it got a bit hot and I had to have a glass of milk.
You've lost your resistance. Absolutely terrible.
Wakefield does have the world's first drive-through fish and chip restaurant, which is...
Harry Ramsden's?
No, it's called The Empire. It used to be a cinema, and that is a world first. It says so on the outside. I mean, whether it's true or not, I don't know, but that's one of the other wonders of Wakefield. We're in the shadow of Leeds, and this is why we all hate Leeds, because Leeds claim everything as their own. Sam Burgess, he's from Leeds, he's from Dewsbury.
It sounds like that From a marketing point of view, you'd be the perfect person to sort of market Wakefield, because we've talked about marketing a few times on this on our podcast about, well, we could probably do a better job than the RFL, because we're going to come on to this, aren't we, Rob? And about
we'll come on to it now. I mean, I work nonstop. I've got two young children. You know, Dennis, well, does fuck all, but he's down there in his cottage in Glastonbury. But somehow, between the two of us, we managed to put out more GIFs, more tweets, more movies, get more views than the RFL seems to get, who sporadically put one out, you know, a week every Tuesday or something. We just don't get it, Richard. We don't understand who's doing the job and what it's all about, because, it, you know, guys like us who have got no budget whatsoever seem to very easily be able to compete with them, if not do something better. And you seem to be the same. We watch your tweets and everything else that you put out on your podcast. It's not rocket science anymore.
No, and it is no budget, isn't it? And you have to have a little bit of creativity or whatever to do things. When some things work and some things don't. I think the problem the RFL have got is that since the split from Super League, they've lost a lot of people who worked there before, and they haven't been able to replace them as yet, because obviously they've got a slightly smaller budget than before. So the people there are working hard. It's not a knock on the people. It's, how well do you use your resource? I've been banging the drum for women's rugby for the last year or so since I discovered it. It didn't exist before I'd heard of it, but now it's the best thing ever. And I keep saying this because it's actually true. The RFL should be putting everything into promoting Women's Rugby League, because leave Super League to sort out the Super League. That's fine. They've got that. The Championship is not an elite competition. It's the second best competition. The Challenge Cup, yeah, fair enough when it's on, but it's, you know, once every month or so. And the England team, obviously, but they never play. So the only elite competition the Rugby Football League have is the Women's Super League. And they can create something out of that, because there's never been a bigger focus on women's sport. There's never been a bigger amount of media coverage on women's sport. And we're not getting any part of the pie. And I don't know. I think sometimes we choose the wrong targets. Are there enough people to justify making a League One show or whatever? And that's no disrespect to the teams in League One or the fans of teams in League One. Obviously, I've got a soft spot for Coventry Bears or whatever. But is it worth spending money having a highlights program for League One, putting it on your app where people are only going to watch it if they've got the app? You know, I used the example of the RFU the other week because they're our closest cousins, I guess. They put on some games from Twickenham, some county championship games on YouTube and Facebook, and people can watch them without having to download an app, without being rugby fans in general. They could just see it and think, oh, watch this, it's free. What are we doing? We're hiding everything behind an app. I understand why.
Yeah. You know, one thing, if you were on The Apprentice, you know what would happen. Alan Sugar would say, well, you're completely eliminating half your market. You know, because because I've heard him say that when they're obviously like promoting it more to sort of like a gender and so on. But if you can grow that other half of the market, then you're obviously going to get the benefit in both games for women's and men's rugby league in the long term.
I think men's rugby league has been on TV since the 1950s. It's on every week on Sky. It's on the radio. Everyone who is interested in sport has heard of rugby league. They know Leeds, they know Wigan, they know Warrington, they know St Helens. But these are new teams we can, or new athletes or whatever, we can exploit as a new market. I wonder if people have realised that or not. You know, look at the Women's World Cup in football. I mean, it's everywhere.
Now, Sam, where do you sit on this? Because, you know, it's a contentious issue, because my partner has said on numerous occasions, please don't touch on Women's Rugby League on the Skype podcast, because we don't know how to handle it. We think we're going to be feminist, we're going to be sexist, we don't know where we're coming from, and we're a little bit shy, and we've sort of steered away from it. I have noticed when I've been to the Halliwell Jones on a couple of occasions when I've been over there, the women really do sort of fancy the men that play rugby league. I mean, we've had a few with Tom Lynham that, you know, crack onto Tom Lynham on our Twitter page. How do we feel about cracking onto a woman rugby league player? Is it double standards not being able to do that? Sam, your thoughts?
Thank you for that hospital pass. But to be serious about that for a moment, I mean, it blew up earlier this week with a tweet in the Women's Football World Cup, where one of the past players, or a female journalist, had tweeted a picture of the panel, and it was all good-looking past players, and she'd said that, something like that, and she got shot down for mentioning that they were good-looking. Now, I understand that, because just at the moment, in society, we're at a stage where
we've been positive, you might want to hang up, Richard, now. Yeah. Hang on, any second.
No, getting the lawyers.
In the long term, we just want more people involved, and that doesn't matter whether they're women, they're men, they're old, they're young, they're from whatever walk of life. We have to be all inclusive, and I think we need to encourage anyone who wants to get involved in the game. There you go. Serious point over.
Right. So, in answer to the question, then, there's a nice young lady playing rugby league. Is it okay to think she's more than a rugby league player? That's what I'm asking the question, because, you know, Tom Lynam gets
the pitch. On the pitch, you're watching her as a rugby league player.
Right. Okay.
In the bar later on that night, whatever.
Do you?
As long as you're polite.
I think we're just overthinking it a bit, Rob. I think that's what the problem is. I think at the end of my partner's
a journalist, and she works for the most PC, you know, she works for the Indigenous television network in Australia. You know, they could not get more PC if they try. Every night I get told off. So I just wanted to know sort of where we stood on this. That's all. Just where we're coming from. Right. Well, we should probably move on, shouldn't we, to our next section, which is with the Tony's departure from the chip shop, heading over to Kingston upon Hull. Has our psychic darling been able to regather her composure, fillet the fish, peel the spuds, and batter her 12-inch sausage? Well, it's over to Dennis and his weekly call to Madam Boyd.
Again. Is that a Ouija board reading?
No, Dennis. You sent me an appointment from your Outlook calendar.
It's MB Intuition at Work, I think. Well, what a week, Madam Boyd. We've had Callum Watkins, episode 7, you'd be leaving Leeds.
And that following Tony Smith, departing to OKR, as you predicted in episode 6.
Yes, dear. I've seen them all come and go.
Are you still there? Fit enough then after losing Tony to give us predictions, Madam Boyd?
Of course, dear. It takes more than one man to satisfy my balls. James?
Oh, I forgot about James. He's on gardening leave, isn't he?
Indeed. He's fascinated with my bush. Aren't you, James? Are you looking forward to gardening later?
No, I won't be able to enjoy it until, 5 o'clock on Saturday? And see where we're at then.
Oh, you've become so masterful, James.
Have you a prediction then, Madam Boyd?
Indeed, I have a non-world exclusive. That's right, James. A bit harder, harder, get a rhythm. 40 beats, 20 beats, wakey, wakey, Mr. Atkins. Go and get your rhubarb. And backroom star, Mr. Gleason. Dances like a butterfly, but stings like a bee, or a wasp, maybe.
Very interesting. Anything else?
Not now, Dennis. I must take James up the attic. Are you ready to come upstairs, James?
I'll be burning some nervous energy up there, and I'll be doing a bit of...
I'm sorry, James. What do you mean?
Kicking and swearing, I'm sure.
Ooh, you are awful, James, but I like.
Well, Dennis, what do we make of this? Bees around honey, wasps around honey. It seems to me that there's someone on their way to rugby union from rugby league.
I think there's a few of them around knocking about this week, isn't there? There's been obviously speculation with after Sean Long disappearing. And then I think there's a couple more to go by the sounds of it. Are we taking a guess, Sam?
Well, you mentioned rhubarb again. Maybe Richard might have heard something at his end.
Oh, I know nothing. I'm the least connected man in rugby league. I only know what Mark tells me. or Scully. So I've got no idea. Or what I read in the paper on a Monday morning when I'm looking to see if I've got a letter in the League Express letters page again. It's interesting how they keep coming for the coaches, isn't it? And they have bigger budgets, they have more money. There's not much we can do about it, I guess.
Not saying anything else about how heavy someone is.
No, that's confidential. We can't give that one away.
Okay.
It's not out in the public domain.
Right. I do call that.
When these rugby league boys do head over to Union, though, surely it's a different game. I mean, how would you coach rugby union if you've never played it before?
Yeah.
I don't quite fathom that there's surely players knocking around in rugby union that could do a better
job. They can afford it because I think by all accounts, Sean Long's only doing like the halfback business. So, like, you know, they've got about multiple coaches, haven't they? So he's probably just like, you know, looking at the kicks, the positioning and things like that, I suppose.
Any unrest at St Helens, Sam? Do you think, based on the fact they lost at London last week, did that have anything to do with the Sean Long issues? Or do we think it was just a case they played one too many kids in the team?
They played on a plastic pitch at, 4G pitch. A London team who, when they pull it together, can do that. And I listened to the last 20 minutes of that, and it was going back to what we said earlier. The commentators in London were loving every minute of it.
Good
on them. Do you remember how many polypropylene grass needles are used in a smart pitch, Sam? Quick test.
Something like, I don't know, I'm going to guess at 4,500 per square metre.
Oh, Jesus.
You can't remember, can you? I did all that bloody research and you can't remember.
I wasn't listening.
Oh, for God's sake.
It was the plastic pitches was the death of Warrington hockey. I used to play hockey for Warrington, and then we went into the Pound Stretcher League. Wakefield went in as well. It was Wakefield and Warrington were the two northern teams. Seriously, they were. Two northern teams that went into the National League, and we had to play on better Astro pitches, and Warrington didn't have one. And we had to go and play firstly at Lynn, which the pitch wasn't good enough, and then we ended up playing at Salford, and the club moved to Salford, and that was the end of hockey in Warrington, really. I'm not sure if Wakefield are still knocking around.
The one thing that seems quite unusual about that whole statement was the fact that you were in the Pound Stretcher League, being south of the river. That's absolute bollocks.
Pretty sure that's what it was called, wasn't it, Richard, back then? In the heyday?
It doesn't sound like a sponsor for hockey, does it? Hockey
I
seems
have a
more
funny feeling.
Like Land Rovers and stuff.
It was Wakefield, Warrington, then it was Hounslow. It was all the teams down south, and there was just the two northern teams that propped up the division for some reason.
Now, Wakefield, they're still there. And Wakefield play where the Rugby Union Club used to play before Bradford Bulls pulled their money out and they went kaput. And I think they've changed what used to be the rugby pitch and used to be grass into another hockey, whatever the pitches are, plastic pitches, you say. So, Wakefield Hockey Club still going. Still fills up the back of the local paper with all their results every weekend. I don't know if it's good or not. I've never been to watch.
Good game, hockey. I enjoy hockey. It's a good game. It all changed at Warrington. They actually kept, still okay. It was fine.
Believe it? 1988 to 1989 England Hockey League season, the men's Pound Stretcher.
Come on, get in.
Wikipedia.
Oh, dear.
See, people moan about mushy peas, but you got the Pound Stretcher League there.
Over those happy days. Right, we should move on to the poll this week. We've only run it over a couple of days. It was, which player would you like to see given a new contract out the wire? We've had a few landslides on the poll recently, but none more than this one. The four options were Lamatazi, Kevin Brown, Sitaliki Akawala, or Super Benny Westwood. Well, it looks like Super Benny Westwood may be on his way back to Wakefield because he only got 2% of the vote. Lamatazi didn't do much better. He got 3%. Kevin Brown came in with a surprisingly 7% of the vote, although I do think Dennis voted for him just out of sympathy in a message he sent me. But Sitaliki Akawala, probably going back to what we said before about these forwards that suddenly find a bit of form and run, and players suddenly think their fans suddenly think they're wonderful. He got 88% of the vote that he should be the player that Warrington re-sign next year. Richard, you've seen a bit of this bloke. Have you got any qualms about his running style, this sort of shoulder he runs with into the face of the opposition? You think it's legal or think he should be tamed a bit?
Well, the NFL seems to think it's legal, or the Super League, or whoever runs these things. It's like when Nick Fozard had his massive arm, didn't he? He broke his arm once, then every week he had more and more padding on his arm. And
I did that
amazingly
to me.
amazingly led with it. I'm joking, of course. It's an interesting, wasn't it? I don't know where is Ben Westwood going. What's going to happen? Obviously,
he's going to retire.
Yeah, I mean, good, because he's had a great career. Great bit of business for both clubs when he left Wakefield to go to Warrington a million years ago, and I'm sure he'll go down in folklore at Warrington after his exploits over the past 15 years or so. Yeah. 2002, I think it was, wasn't it? So yeah, well, it's kind of, everyone likes players like that, don't they? Who run hard and bash people and knock them over. It was amusing watching that clip, when it must have been legal, so it's okay.
The thing I like about Akawala the most is he seems to be in love. I adore looking at his Instagram page and just seeing the romance flourishing between him and the girl from Warrington. I don't know who she is. We should really get them on and do a bit of a blind date episode, shouldn't we? Because there's genuine...
You can do your silver voice then.
Right, come on now.
This is the problem with Instagram, is you can find out too much about your favourite players these days.
Yeah, it is a bit like that, isn't it? Yeah, it is a bit like that. Okay, well, we all in agreement then, Sam? I mean, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion, wasn't it? We were going to get Sitaliki Akawala. He's the guy that we want next year again now? Or are we still sitting on the fence until the end of the year?
No, I'm going to go with, as long as he keeps up the same attitude he's played with for the last 3 weeks, I would be delighted if he re-signed.
Fair enough. Dennis, you happy with him?
Yeah. Just have to keep practicing his name now, won't we, for next year as well? We'd get it
right. Fair enough. Okay, right. Yes, now even Gareth Widdop couldn't escape his apocalyptic section, although it does seem like Mr. Widdop marginally agreed with Dennis about his VAR rugby ball. Brace yourself, Richard. It's time for Dennis's Tackle Bags.
Tackle Bags.
Right, let's get on to the serious bit now. I'm going to keep it serious today. Everybody can keep up anyway. Right, last week we discussed, what did we discuss? I can't remember. Oh, yeah. I'm just looking at it. Fear. Remember what fear stood for? Finite energy analysis rate.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get me to do the phonetics again, will you? Jesus. This was the application of performance monitoring devices hooked up to players to determine the power exerted and whether the coach should help the coach to... rotate a player. So using that data, cracking response, obviously, with the Gareth Widdop being a big fan of tackle bags now. He enjoyed the fact that he liked the idea of
Are you confusing the phrase big fan with looked completely bemused?
No, I was just wondering. It was a leotard. Rob threw me the other day and he said it was something else, but he was a big fan of leotards. Tom Lynham was a big fan of being the lefty. So, it's certainly building this section. As you can see, Richard, this is well rehearsed.
Has he started yet, Sam? We should mention that next weekend, the lovely village that Dennis lives in, the hamlet that he lives in down there near Glastonbury, is having their... It's a fete, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, it's Open Gardens. It's
Open Gardens for charity, and every garden in the village puts on some form of display. And last year, Dennis did a wonderful 9-hole crazy golf course, which went down an absolute storm. So he's got to do it again this year. But you've left yourself not too much time, haven't you, mate?
Yeah. I'm quite stressed at the moment, fitting everything in. So I don't know. I'll be all right. Anyway, going back to the suggestion of players being wired up for data performance, 42% said no. Told Buddha Boy, he came back with, no, it will be uncomfortable, like my Risley GPS tag. So just for you, Richard, Risley is a prison. So he was not too happy about that. Yes, 48%. Yes, 48%. This is a flaccid erection. He said, I like the idea of it. It was as Sam, only if it was as Sam suggested, with an app. There you are, Sam.
Oh, there you go. Well done, Sam. He's
getting in on tackle bags. See how I'm... getting you in now.
Who was that from? Flaccid Cock. What was his name again?
Flaccid Erection.
Okay,
it's an oxymoron. Yeah, just and 10%, unusually, people couldn't be decided. Charles said, what does anal rubber do? Obviously referring to my phonetics of...
Yes, they weren't very good last week, Dennis. Yeah, fair enough.
Anyway.
Oh, well, that was good. Good to know.
No, this week.
Are we finished? Are we finished?
This week, I'd like to discuss the bringing all the trilogy of technology together that we've been discussing over the last few weeks. We've discussed about the ball having a chip in it so we could determine whether there's a touchdown. I think we also discussed with Gareth Widdop about the wiring up the players as well. So bringing all that together, and with the advent of 5G, what we really need to do with rugby league, I think, is to embrace what they've done in cricket and tennis with Hawkeye. You know, it's about time that you notice how I use cricket and tennis first, Rob, from a class situation.
Thank you. Thank you. Do you want to mention hockey as well?
Well, I don't know if they've got Hawkeye in hockey.
They use it in Gymkhana now as well, in badminton.
Okay. Isn't it about time rugby league basically embrace this technology? And in particular, I was watching the game on Thursday night, and if you remember the Albert Kelly try where Connor supposedly tapped the ball back and he dived on it for a try, and they were looking at it on the video ref, as they always do, for about 10 minutes, and I was waiting to get to bed, but what I did is I stopped it on the TV, and where he touched it, I drew a vertical line to the floor and then rolled it on and plotted where the ball dropped. It was clearly forward. Now, this Hawkeye, which is basically a radar system that follows and tracks the ball, would easily identify that and then just give you a quick decision. So, when you watch cricket and tennis, isn't it about time that we embrace that as a game? What do you think?
I think that's a very good idea. And I think we could market that really well with the rugby league, because rather than calling it Hawkeye, we should probably go back to that classic Yorkshire film of Kez, and we could call it Kez-eye.
Kez-eye. Don't you think
that'd get a lot of people in, wouldn't it? Hey, write that down, Dennis. That's ours.
I'm writing
that
it down.
Kez-eye. Tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. So I was thinking I'll write to Simon Moran. He's got plenty of money. And see if he's willing to invest in this new adventure.
Kez-eye. Put Kez-eye down. Get trademark.
If any of our listeners think it's a great idea, then obviously write into the usual methods, which are, what are they again?
Oh. whatbevan@gmail.com, direct message at whatbevan, Facebook, whatever else we've got, although Instagram, Pornhub. Whatever else we've got, those ones.
I'm available on all platforms. Just thought I'd put that there as well.
Good on you, Dennis.
Richard, what do you think of that idea? Do you think we need?
Is Richard still
like
awake?
I'm still here. I like the idea of a ball with a chip in that's going to be stolen by, as soon as it's in the crowd, someone's going to nick that and try and get the chip out and send it to cash.
We'd be able to track them. We'd be able to track them, Richard. That could be all part of the of the game, wouldn't it? Track them home.
Now they've put a chip into the World Cup so it doesn't go missing again. Anything that speeds up the video referee process. Because, we're all big fans of Fatboy Slim, but we've all heard right here, right now, far too much and far too long. I'm amazed they've got a mix that goes that long at the grounds. Yeah. I preferred it when they played Making Your Mind Up by Bucks Fizz, to be honest. But anything that makes the video referee better, or as people seem to want to at the moment, get rid of it, the best for this for the sport should be a lot shorter than it is.
With the Wakefield game coming up, it's time to see who Callum believes is Trinity's danger man. Or is he predicting something different? Plus, how does Callum think Luther Burrell will turn out?
With Warrington's next fixture being against Wakefield Trinity at the Halliwell Jones Stadium, picking a danger man can be pretty difficult. Wakefield haven't got people like Tom Johnston, Bill Tupu in their team at the moment because of injury, so they're rallying around, playing for each other really, you could say. No David Fifita in recent games as well. They're a side who don't exactly have that one outstanding player, obviously without those three men being injured. They're always rallying around each other, digging in for each other, and just picking up brilliant results, you know, where they can, wherever they can. And I can't really pick a danger man. I think Warrington have got to be careful with Wakefield's confidence in terms of playing for each other and their desire. And I think that's something that we could struggle with, but I think it should be a fairly standard home match for us if we tame the Trinity side. And I just want to touch on something that's happened in the week, the announcement of Luther Burrell, the signing. We all knew he was coming, but he's officially signed this week from rugby union side Northampton Saints. Fantastic signing. I'm really, really, really excited to see him play. I think he's going to be a brilliant asset to our side. He can play a number of positions. He's a man mountain, so you can expect him to play in the backs, probably in centre, but also second row. He's fast enough, so wing's an option as well, but I think I can see him in centre, replacing Ryan Atkins or Bryson Goodwin if they're to leave at the end of the season, which is looking likely. So him with Charnley and King over to the other side with Lynham could be pretty exciting. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing him play in a Warrington shirt, as he's going to pick up the number 28 shirt. But that's about it. Warrington against Wakefield, we shall see what happens there. And Luther Burrell, we shall also see what happens with him when he plays for the Warriors.
Right, well, we should probably move on to the Warrington and Wakefield game. It's clear in this section, Richard, that I lead the competition on our predictions by about, 30 points at this stage. I wouldn't even bother listening to these two, but we will go to them first. Sam, your thoughts on this one? Wakefield at home, we've been stung twice at home by Salford and Hull. Is this going to be the third time Wakefield are going to come away with the goods?
No, I'm sorry, Richard. I don't. Unless you get your first team back on the pitch, I don't see much for you. Warrington 30, Wakefield 14.
Right, fair enough. Okay, all right. Dennis, you want to go next, mate?
Can we not just go to Richard next?
Don't go, Richard, because all he does this thing that the price is right. You know,
31.
Whatever you say, you'll put one on each. You know, you used to get these thickies on the Price is Right and want to go, you know, 30 quid and then the last one to go 40 quid and leave that entire margin of between 30 and 40 out. This is what he does every week. It's just the way he goes about things. I'll go next. Well, I think this will be the most entertaining game of the year at the Halliwell Jones, because I think these two teams are possibly the most two entertaining teams in the competition, barring St Helens. So I think it'll be a high scoring affair. I would like to see, I mean, I can't go as far as saying that I want Wakefield to win, but I don't like the way Wigan are creeping into that top six. So I'm almost of the opinion that we should forfeit the points and let Wakefield win. It'll make no difference to us still finishing second, and it'll keep Wigan out of the top six. So I'll go for a Wakefield win. Extra time, 19-18.
And that's why he's top of the predictions, not.
Yeah. Come
right,
on, Richard.
I'm going to go.
Oh, you're going, Dennis. I'm going to go writing an essay there for the last 5 minutes. I don't know what you've been doing.
31-24 to Warrington.
It's like the tactical voting at the European elections, because you don't want them to win, so you vote for somebody else just so they don't. Yeah.
Our intellect still didn't work.
It's
completely meaningless how much we know about the game.
It's just picking two random numbers and going one team's going to win. Yeah. People get very upset when you pick against their side, and those people are the ones who are idiots. I don't care if people think Wakefield are going to lose a match. They probably will do. Warrington will win because they are better. But it should be an exciting and entertaining encounter at the Halliwell Jones Stadium, where the press room's not bad. Not bad. It's usually lasagna. I will go with Warrington to win by 36 points to 20.
Okay. It's going to be a high-scoring affair. Certainly a game you want to get down and watch then, by the sounds of it. It's going to be an entertaining afternoon. Okay, I think that's about it. You can always drop us your bombs, up and unders, doodlebugs to whatbevan@gmail.com or direct message on Twitter to whatbevan. Please take the time out, please, to listen to the 4020 podcast with the gorgeous Richard, the delectable Mark, the sexy Phil, and of course Mr. Schofield. Richard, many thanks. You're a proper, improper and Mick Fraction all in one. It's a see you later from RSW.
Thank you, it's been a pleasure.
He may not be 40-20, but more of a fraction that represents a numerator and a denominator. It's a wholesome goodbye from Sam.
All the best.
And certainly closer to a 35-25 or a partial fraction decomposition with the equation of C over the power of U times N divided by T. It's a calculus cheerio from Dennis.
To see you next.
My name's from London and I'm off to stalk Gareth Widdop. You've been listening to What Would Brian Beaven Say?
Who on earth picked this music?
Richard. I think he used to play it in Mustang Sally's when he was Casanova-ing the girls.
Do you think he ever got his LMO transmitter up?